Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jettikin.
Let's start out by thanking this past week's Patreon subscribers. They went to patreon.com/HollywoodCrimeScene. There's some new episodes up there for you. And as always, after our main show, we always do an after show.
Where we shoot the shit.
Where we just, it's very casual. We talk about whatever's going on.
Whatever we want.
This week we had Lori, Nikki, Natalie, Tickle, Maria, Belinda, Alex, Hope, Mindy, Jamie, David, Puffy Burger, Iva, Kayla, and Michelle.
Wait, what's Puffy Burger?
Somebody is named Puffy Burger.
And I wonder if they're a burger shop.
Would you eat at a place called Puffy Burger?
If they gave me free food.
I'm gonna look this up. Honestly, no, now I need to know if it is. I need to look it up on Instagram to see if this is actually, it's probably just like someone's screen name.
I know, I'm just
fantasizing. But like now I'm like,
what if we have a listener who makes burgers? I'll try them.
Okay.
But maybe it's just a person's fun name.
There's something called Puff Burger.
Oh.
It's not in the States.
Okay. Well, forget it then.
Okay. Well, this episode for this week, we're going to be talking about a serial killer who is not well known, but is from Los Angeles. This is a pretty wild story. Now, my main sources for this episode were a lot of newspaper articles. There was some great information from the SF Gate, as well as a Dateline episode, which I only had the transcription of. I wanted to watch it, but I couldn't.
Oh, I do like when they have transcriptions of the shows on.
I do too, but Keith Morrison narrated this one, right. So I really wanted to hear him.
Right. So sometimes when I'm researching, though, I'll like to look at both.
Yes.
Because then I can find things that I wanted where it's harder to rewind and stuff on those episodes.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to read it too sometimes.
Yeah. So I definitely, I got information from a bunch of different places for this episode. Let's start at the beginning. In the 1970s, a series of similar murders committed against middle-aged women in the harbor area of Los Angeles baffled police. The killer had left behind no usable evidence. There were no fingerprints and no witnesses. Each woman was found strangled, nude, or partially nude, and had been raped. The first of this series occurred on Christmas Day, 1972. 43-year-old Lois Petrie, a recent widow who worked as a cook, went out to a local bar in San Pedro to go drinking on Christmas Day. She had plans to meet up with her family later for a holiday dinner, but was never heard from again. The following day, her sister Erna went to her home, and it was there that she discovered Lois's partially nude body. The cause of death was determined to be homicide via manual strangulation. The killer had left behind semen inside of Lois, but obviously at the time, this is nearly two decades before DNA evidence, so this case quickly went cold. 2 years later, on August 19th, 1974, the body of a woman was found in Harbor Park in the town of Wilmington, which is just east of San Pedro, where Lois Petrie lived. The woman, who was determined to be in her 50s, was found face down in some bushes wearing only stockings. She appeared to have been dragged from a parking lot and then dumped into these bushes. She had been raped and also strangled. It would take police nearly a month to identify this woman. In the meantime, the papers referred to her as Jane Doe 52. A few weeks later, a third body of a middle-aged woman in the harbor area was found. Just 2 miles from the dump site of Jane Doe 52, the nude body of 54-year-old Anna Felch was discovered by a construction worker at a construction site at 8 a.m. on September 4th, 1974. The construction site was located only a few blocks from Anna's home. Anna Felch was last seen at 1 a.m. leaving a bar on the 1900 block of Pacific in San Pedro. The medical examiner determined that she had been dead between 3 and 4 hours when the body was found. So she must have been murdered not long after she was last seen. Now, this body was also reported in the papers that it was she was found, she was bound.
Mm-hmm.
That's also, there was like another article that said it, that might not be true, but it was initially reported that when they found her, she had been bound. Like the other women before her, Anna had been raped and strangled. On September 12th, Jane Doe 52 was identified by her husband, Raymond, as 50-year-old Catherine Medina. Police located him after her purse was discovered in the San Pedro Harbor the day before by some fishermen. Raymond Medina told police that he last saw his wife the day before her body was discovered, which was August 18th. He said that they were walking down the street after leaving a bar and they had gotten into an argument. He said that she flagged down a van occupied by a male driver and got in. And that was the last time he ever saw her alive.
Oh my gosh.
All three of these women were described as heavy drinkers or alcoholics, and they liked to frequent bars in San Pedro. So there's like a link now between these women. Right. They're all middle-aged women. They've all been killed in the same manner. They've all been sexually assaulted, and all of them have been described by friends and family members as heavy drinkers who frequent these bars. Friends of Anna Felch told detectives that Anna had complained about being bothered by a man a few days before she died. But detectives were stumped. They were unable to pull fingerprints from any of the scenes. And at this point, they were still unsure if the murders were linked. It wouldn't be later that they would link these murders. Detective Ted Light told the San Pedro News Pilot that him and his partner were going to have to, quote, do just like Columbo to solve the case.
Okay. Do it.
What police didn't know is that the murders of these women in Los Angeles could be linked to some other murders that happened in San Francisco. Months earlier, on March 12, 1974, 55-year-old Irene Hind was found raped and strangled to death in the hallway of a bar she owned in the Tenderloin. In October that same year, which was 2 months after the murders in San Pedro, another body was found. This woman was older than the previous victims, but she had also been raped and strangled. 83-year-old Maude Burgess was found in her apartment at 500 Hyde Street. She was naked, lying face down on the bed. The bed had been stripped, and the sheets were torn into strips and used to tie her to the box spring. She had a bandana tied around her throat and a pillowcase over her head. The apartment had been ransacked, but there was no sign of a break-in, leading detectives to believe that she knew her attacker or she had willingly let them in. She was found by the building manager after her neighbor complained about the noise coming from Maude's apartment. It was her radio, which had been left on for several days. Maude had lived in the apartment building for the last 12 years of her life. She was a very small woman who was described as frail by the San Francisco Examiner. Maude was retired, living on her pension, and she didn't leave her apartment very much, save for her twice monthly visits to the hair salon, and it was rare that she would have left her apartment at night. On the afternoon of October 12th, Maude visited her downstairs neighbor on the first floor after a trip to the grocery store. She then went back to her fifth floor apartment before it got dark out. Soon after returning to her apartment, there was a knock at the door. Maude removed the security chain from her door and opened it. It was her neighbor. Maude had accidentally left a loaf of bread behind at her house. That was the last time her neighbor saw her alive, was when she returned the bread to her. The next day, loud rock music could be heard coming from the radio Maude kept next to her bed. By that time, Maude had been killed. It wasn't until the following day when Maude's neighbor reported the ongoing noise coming from her apartment, which then led to the grim discovery of her body. Detectives interviewed 50 people during their investigation of Maude's murder, but they turned up no leads. Again, there was no physical evidence left behind, and they were stumped. The following year, in March of 1975, the body of 60-year-old Leah Griffin was found in a San Francisco hotel room. She was discovered by a maid at the hotel. She had been strangled and sexually assaulted like the victims before her. Like the women in Los Angeles, Leah was described as someone who liked to get drunk at bars. That same summer in 1975, a young woman named Jean was preparing to move west to California from Pittsburgh to be with her boyfriend. She flew out to the Central Coast, San Luis Obispo, where she planned to get an apartment with her boyfriend. Jean's boyfriend wasn't in town yet, but she made plans to meet up with his stepfather, who offered to help them find an apartment. The stepfather was 49-year-old Adolf Londenberg. Adolf originally hailed from Lexington, Kentucky. His father was a German immigrant and a butcher. His mother died when he was very young. Adolf met his wife, Annelle, in Trinidad when he was serving in the Navy. They got married in 1944, and he adopted her son, Steve. The newlyweds moved with Steve to California and eventually landed in San Pedro, where Adolf wound up working as a cab driver in the late 60s. According to people who knew him, Adolf and Annelle were not a good match. He was a bit of a shut-in, and she was very social. Annelle was really into fitness, and she even worked for Jack LaLanne.
Ooh.
We've talked about Jack LaLanne.
With his weird fit body.
He's got that mid-century fitness body.
Yeah.
You know with a type.
I know exactly the body.
It's a big old barrel chest.
Very barrel chested. And he's like 100, but he's still very muscular.
Is he still alive?
To be honest, I don't know. The thing about, I feel like he's not,
I feel like he either died 20 years ago or he's like 110 now.
Yeah, I don't like have a memory of him dying, but he's probably dead.
Okay, he died in 2011. I think that's around the same time I bought his juicer.
Oh.
I don't have it anymore. It broke.
Okay.
But it was very good when it was working.
Like, much like Jack LaLanne.
This guy did his own infomercials for the juicer. That's why I bought it.
I just remember him being around, and then I'm like, well, I don't think I've seen him in a while, so he probably did die, because he seemed like pretty active.
Yes.
Late in life.
He was one of those active seniors.
Yes.
That one can only aspire to be. I mean, this guy was probably in better shape at 100 than I am now.
I don't want to be that active. I want to rest more.
Okay, he was 96 when he died.
Yeah.
That's old. Oh, he's from San Francisco originally. Oh, I didn't know that.
Me either.
Okay.
Okay. Well, where
were
we?
That's the Jack LaLanne corner. Anyway, so this guy, Adolf, his wife, she was a girl about town. She was very active, social. She worked for Jack LaLanne. This is a quote from the SF Gate from one of Adolf's friends, Jimmy Martin. He said, "Adolf never liked to go out and dance. He was withdrawn. I don't think he knew how to dance." One thing Adolf was really into was making canes.
Like walking canes?
Like walking sticks.
Okay.
This was like his longtime hobby. He would find old wood places. I don't know.
Like driftwood?
Yeah, like salvageable sticks. Wood.
And he's like, "Ooh, that's a nice stick.
That could be a good stick shape."
Yeah.
And then he would make it into a cane and I guess whittle little designs on it. I tried to find pictures of his canes. I could not. Apparently, he was featured at one point in the LA Times. Could not find that.
No.
But the SF Gate said he was one time featured in the LA Times for his canes.
Quite a whittler.
He loved whittling. So this had been a hobby of his since he lived in Kentucky.
Right.
One thing many people said about Adolf, however, is even though he was like a shut-in, he was very friendly and he did like to help people. After being married for 30 years, Adolf and Annelle divorced. He then moved to San Francisco, where he worked a few different jobs, including as a security guard and a cab driver. In the summer of 1975, he drove down to San Luis Obispo to help his stepson's girlfriend find an apartment.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm a huge fan of cashmere, and that can be a very expensive habit. That's why I was so excited to find Quince. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am absolutely living in my black cashmere mini dress, and to be honest, I want to buy like three more because I can't imagine my life without them. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/Hollywood for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Hollywood to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Hollywood. I'm a huge fan of Rocket Money. Not only did they help me find and cancel some of my unwanted subscriptions, in general, they've given me a great picture of my financial status and helped me save money. I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I love the dashboard that shows me this month's spending compared to last month's, so I can clearly see my spending habits. Plus, they'll help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. That's rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene.
So Jean has just moved out west. She's just met her possible father-in-law, the stepfather of her boyfriend, Steve. And upon meeting him, Jean really liked Adolf. She recalled to Dateline that they went shopping at flea markets together and just overall had a really nice time before her boyfriend arrived in town. But that didn't last. After a few days, the niceness devolved into weirdness. Adolf started coming on to Jean. This is her boyfriend's stepdad. She told Dateline that Adolf left her love letters.
Ew.
She, like, he would leave her notes on the windshield of her car. Ugh. And then they're like, he's like picking her up to take her to the store or whatever, help her get set up. But he's like doing this also.
Yeah.
And it's from him. They're right. Addressed from him. She told Keith Morrison, quote, "It was creepy. It was creepy. I mean, this is a fellow who's I don't know how many years older than I, and it was very strange." But that certainly wasn't the end of his creepiness. One day, Adolf was driving alone with Jean in his car when he turned to her and said that he had murdered 4 women. He said he murdered 3 in Los Angeles and 1 in San Francisco. He referred to these murders as his 4 sins.
Well, the name Adolf is ruined forever.
See? So obviously Jean was like, "What? Excuse me?"
I mean, that's a pretty shocking revelation.
She's just met this guy.
Yeah.
Everything's going pretty okay, even though he's starting to come on to her. And then he breaks this news to her.
Wow.
And she's alone with him until her boyfriend gets into town. Now, Gene was in shock, to say the least.
Yeah.
Surely this couldn't be true. I mean, who would just admit to something like that so out of the blue, just driving in your car?
The thing that makes it believable is that he's like, those are my four sins. Like, that seems really in line with a creep. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's a very specific thing.
Right.
It's a very specific, weird thing to refer to human beings that you murdered. So it, yeah.
Yeah. It, that, like, that seems believe, that makes it more believable to me. Or yeah. would have if right. someone said that to me.
But regardless, even though Gene was like, I can't even believe this. It was still like, okay, but even if you didn't do it, why would you fucking say that? What's wrong with you? I mean,
yeah, it's still very weird regardless.
It's very alarming, very creepy. So she was freaked out significantly. So she decided, I can't be alone with Adolf anymore. I can't spend any more time with him. I'm going to keep myself occupied until my boyfriend Steve gets into town. And then we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So Gene told the SF Gate, quote, I guess he told me that as kind of a threat. He told me not to tell Steve. So she speculated that he told her as sort of like a power move.
Right.
She still, I mean.
To make her feel unsettled because she knew this information.
Right.
And that would mean she could go too.
Yes. He was a dangerous man. So when her boyfriend, Steve, arrived in town, she told him, she's like, your stepdad told me that he murdered four women.
I bet you she did it the second he walked in the door.
Probably.
She had been like bursting at the seams, right?
Probably, because she spent like the past few days, like she said she was hiding out in the library, like just trying to keep herself
And you don't want
to
do that over the phone.
No.
You got to do it in person.
You got to do it in person. So she told him as soon as he arrived. He was just as alarmed. Fortunately for her, he was on her side 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, that could have been bad too if he was like, I mean, like, how dare you?
Sweet old Adolf? I don't think so.
I don't think so. So they went straight to the San Luis Obispo Police Department. But the police didn't buy it. She told the SF Gate, when I told them, I think they took it very lightly. It seemed like it was brushed off. Just another complaint. The police did alert the San Francisco and Los Angeles police after Gene made this report. LA detectives then questioned Adolf, but he was quickly let go. The murder cases remained cold. Leah Griffin, who was murdered in the San Francisco hotel room, had a daughter named Brooke. Brooke was raised by an aunt as Leah was an alcoholic. When she found out her mother had been murdered, she didn't even know she was living in San Francisco. Brooke said that she did call the police to check in on the status of the case every once in a while, but it didn't seem like the investigators were very close to solving it. She said, I didn't think anybody ever cared. Mm. When Steve Londonberg and Gene got married, Adolf was not invited to the wedding.
Did he know they turned him in?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because he got questioned.
I mean, that was like... He told her and then immediately he goes, so they're like, you're not.
Yeah.
They became estranged after that. The couple then moved back to Jean's hometown of Pittsburgh. But to Jean's horror, she continued to receive love letters from her estranged father-in-law.
Gross.
She was terrified that he would just show up one day at their house.
This is like that, the murder of the woman... I can't remember her name right now. The Mormon woman. She was in Utah. Susan Powell. And father-in-law kept sending her love letters and writing songs.
Yes. It reminded me of that too.
Yeah.
Where it was like, what is this?
And it's so aggressive and open. It's not even like secret necessarily.
No. Like, I don't even think Adolf was trying to hide that he was in love with his daughter-in-law.
Well, and he knows that he's sending her physical evidence, like these letters. She can show someone easily, but it's like they're trusting that the women will hide it or something or not
and
cause
be afraid.
A stir or be afraid. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really
it's
creepy.
Sick.
Fortunately for Steve and Jean, Adolf did eventually stop sending the letters and they were able to move on. Adolf married and then divorced again. And at one point, he moved into his other son's house. This guy's name is Gerald. Gerald was married to a woman named Renee, and they had kids. Gerald and Renee ended up getting divorced, but Renee remained very close with Adolf. He was her children's grandfather, and he would often babysit for them. One day, in 2002, her 77-year-old father-in-law told her something horrific. Out of the blue, Adolf turned to her and said, "I raped and murdered 4 women in my lifetime."
Jesus.
This is the second daughter-in-law.
Why is he revealing it to the daughter-in-laws, I wonder? Like,
I think it's some kind of fetish.
Yeah, it's really weird.
But he's only telling the daughter-in-laws.
Yeah.
And she was like, of course, what? Then he described to Renee how he murdered these women and that it was 3 women in San Pedro and 1 in San Francisco. He had raped and strangled them all. He also repeated the phrase about them being his 4 sins.
Ugh.
Adolf told her that back when he was a cab driver in San Pedro, he would pick up women from bars and then drive them home. He claimed that all the women he murdered, they all had some quality that reminded him of his ex-wife. Renee immediately went to the police and told them. And police were stunned when they opened the file that a nearly identical statement had been made to them 30 years earlier about the same guy.
Yeah.
From a different woman.
Yeah.
And they didn't know each other. They lived on opposite sides of the country. But here's 2 nearly identical statements about this guy, Adolf. Renee agreed to a phone-tapped call with her father-in-law. Investigators wanted to see if they could get a confession out of him. Now, Dateline played a recording of this tapped phone call, and I just want to read a snippet of it. Renee said to Adolf, "You know, you dropped a bomb on me, Grandpa, and I haven't had anybody to talk to for days, and I'm kind of like gonna explode here, you know? Are you like, you know, sorry for what you did?" Adolf replied, "I've took all my problems to the Lord." Now, this was not a confession. He didn't say anything.
Right.
She tried to, you know, gently
get him to do
get him to say something, but he just kept saying, "Oh, all my problems are solved by the Lord."
Right. So he's being vague.
He was very vague. The case was certainly no longer cold, however. Investigators re-interviewed Jean at her home in Pittsburgh, and she turned over old photographs that she had of Adolf, as well as her date book from 1975, which she still had for some reason.
Damn, Jean. Just keeping track of
it. Here's the thing about date books. Obviously, they're useless after the year is over, but I always feel weird about throwing them out because I want to shred them first or something. I don't want someone to know what I did all year.
I mean, I guess. Sometimes I'll just pour a lot of coffee and junk on it.
Oh, that's
in the garbage.
Yeah. It's just one of those weird things when you throw out, you're like, you don't just toss it, yeah. Right?
I toss everything.
Yeah. Well, she still had this. I don't know if I would have a 30-year-old date book, but she still had it.
I think it used to be more common to save them.
Really?
I don't know. Like, I feel like that's a thing. Like,
really?
When you go to, I've gone to estate sales and they'll have like all these date books.
What?
And it's just like, oh, it's like a, look, here's what I did. Oh, look at my date book. Yep, that was the 23rd. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Everything's so digital now.
I still use a physical date book.
I always buy them, but then I don't really use them.
I can't do a digital one. I can only do, like, I have to physically write it down to get it in my stupid head.
Yeah.
It just helps me personally. But anyway, she still had the 1975 date book. And written in the date book, she had noted on one of the pages, "Dad confesses sins."
Okay, see, that's a weird thing to write in your date book.
Well, detectives noticed that her date book was kind of like a diary, almost.
Yeah.
Where she made notations about her day.
So that might be more why she saved it, because she was using them as sort of a diary, too.
Oh, yeah. I guess that makes sense. So, yeah, she did just happen to have a note that said, "Dad confesses sins." But what investigators really needed was physical evidence. And LAPD detectives had none of it. According to Detective Richard Bangston, it had all been destroyed. All these murder cases, Their physical evidence was destroyed.
Because there was semen. Did they say that was destroyed?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Because there was semen left behind in each of the victims.
Right.
They didn't have it anymore. They were unable to come up with a DNA profile on any of the evidence slides that they had from Catherine Medina and Ann Felch because it was too degraded. But as if by a miracle, the slides containing evidence from the Lois Petry murder were still stashed away in a drawer at the coroner's office.
Wow, so, real organized. I mean, evidence is just...
I was listening to this cop's interview on Dateline, or I was reading it. I was imagining Keith Morrison's voice.
Yeah.
He was like, wow, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
The evidence was in another drawer?
Yeah, really? And then you go, you'd think police, murder detectives, you keep that stuff a little more organized. Yeah. But he did. I mean, that kind of was what the interview was like. And
I mean, he says what we're all thinking.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And Josh Mankiewicz. Keith Morrison will say what we're all thinking more in the asides.
Yes.
But Josh Mankiewicz will say it right to your fucking face.
There are two genders.
They'd be like, huh, usually not someone how they treat their wife. That was a good impression.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other weird thing about this interview when I was reading it is the cop was saying, he was like, yeah, we schmoozed with the coroner at the coroner's office to get a hold of these files. I'm like, why did you need to schmooze with them? Aren't you guys homicide detectives? Like,
and what is the coroner going to do? Not give it to you? Fuck those assholes. I'll let this murderer free.
I like reread it several times when he was like, yeah, all our evidence got destroyed down at the station, but I pulled some strings at the coroner's office.
I like how they've revealed these things as if they're cute, but we're all horrified. Totally. That this is how things are run.
So it was a miracle that they had this Lois Petry murder evidence, this physical evidence in a slide stashed away. So they had one last chance now. And fortunately for these detectives, that slide delivered them a complete DNA profile.
Wow.
From the killer. The problem was they had no DNA profile of Adolf to match it against because he had never been arrested before. He was not in the system. So detectives had to come up with a plan to get a sample of Adolf's DNA. They located him on the street selling his walking sticks out of his mobile home. Detective Bengston told Dateline that they had an undercover officer approach him and ask him to take him out to coffee to talk about some of his canes.
Really?
Yeah. They're like, hey, can I take you? Like, at this point, Adolf is kind of, they refer to him as a vagabond. I don't know. He's like, he's moving from place to place in the South
Bay.
So
he's in like a movable trailer.
Lives in a mobile van, yeah. A mobile home. It's really unclear because the SF Gate said that the undercover officer lured him to a coffee shop because he wanted to talk about his walking sticks. But the detective on Dateline said they got an undercover officer who wanted to talk to him about some burglaries that were happening in the areas.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I do believe that the burglaries were brought up at one point in the coffee shop, but we'll get to that. I guess we'll get to it. Right now. Okay, so they go to this donut shop in Torrance, and the undercover officer sits down with Adolf, and they're chatting. He brings up some burglaries that were happening in the area, and then Adolf said, I thought you brought me down here to talk about the murders that occurred in the 70s.
The ones I've been accused of committing.
And the UO was stunned. He thought his cover was blown. Like, yeah. That he was just going to get up and leave.
Because he was not a cop, I mean, in the situation.
He was undercover.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, no. But he was able to change the subject and recover from that. And Adolf was none the wiser. The sting wound up being a success. Adolf finished his coffee and left the coffee shop. Then, after he as soon as he closed the door of the coffee shop, a second undercover officer came in and swiped the empty styrofoam cup.
I've seen movies where this has happened.
Man, this cop who was talking to Keith Morrison, he was real proud of this maneuver.
Yeah.
He's like, we had a second undercover cop.
I don't even know why they needed that. Because couldn't the guy sitting there just take it? I mean, Adolf had left at this point.
Yeah, he had discarded it.
Yeah.
So they had a second guy waiting in the wings that swiped the cup, bagged it, yeah, took it to the lab. The DNA on Lois Petrie's slide and the DNA from Adolf's coffee cup was a match, a perfect match. On September 5th, 2003, Adolf Launderberg was arrested for the murder of Lois Petrie and held on a $1 million bail. Lois's son was notified, and he told Detective Vivian Flores that he had always hoped that DNA evidence would one day solve his mom's murder.
Hmm.
So that was a bittersweet moment for sure. Adolf pled not guilty. Following the arrest, Los Angeles detectives continued to investigate the other San Pedro murders, the murder of Catherine Medina and the murder of Anna Felch. Detectives in San Francisco were now looking into the murders again of Leah Griffin, Maude Burgess, and Irene Hind. The press dubbed Adolf Lunderberg the Santa Strangler because he had a white beard and overall Santa Claus appearance.
Mm.
And you look at him, he looks like a strung out Santa because he's not very fat and jolly.
Yeah.
But he has the white beard, and it's like a, okay.
They're like, we need a name. Santa. That's nice, because it's not what you think of for killing.
Yeah. The only places I heard him referred to as the Santa Strangler or the Santa Claus Killer was in the newspaper articles or in the Dateline episode. The press made up that name, and the press would start these articles with, some people call him the Santa Strangler. Like, you guys call him that. You made that name up.
Yeah, because it's like, gives you your little leads.
Right.
Like, not someone you want coming down your chimney. Like, just like these little
blurbs.
Yeah.
I mean, also possibly the fact that Lois Petrie was found the day after Christmas.
Right. But there, other than that,
that's where it ends.
Yeah.
The other thing was, oh, everyone liked him in the community. Not everyone.
Yeah. His daughter-in-laws didn't like
him. They didn't like him very much. So in 2006, Adolf was tried and convicted of the 1972 murder of Lois Petrie. He was sentenced to life in prison. Now, he was never charged for the three other murders that he confessed to committing to his daughters-in-law. And he never confessed to those to the police. There was also no way for the police at this point to obtain any physical evidence to link him to those crimes.
Well, he also only said one in San Francisco.
Right.
So is there speculation they don't know which one of those three might have been him? Or do they think he's lying and that he did all three?
It's just highly suspected.
Right.
That he was responsible for those. But it's the most suspected that he was responsible for Leah, the one who was murdered in the woman who was murdered in the hotel room, Leah Griffin, because that matches up.
And Maude was older.
Yeah, that deviates from the pattern more. But Leah matches up with his timeline a little better.
Yeah.
Than even though they were all relatively, they were like the same year, but Leah matches up with his timeline a little better, I think.
And she was the bar owner. Right?
No, that was Irene.
Okay.
Leah was an alcoholic woman.
I see.
Who?
So that fits too.
Yeah, and she was 60, so that same age range that he liked to
go after.
Yes. So he still remains a suspect, and this dude's still alive.
Really?
He's like 96 or 95.
He's the jackal.
When I said that, I realized, I'm like, oh my God, he's the same age as Jack LaLanne.
But probably not as healthy looking.
No, this guy's not healthy at all. Do you know what I learned while I was researching this case, which is crazy, is that this case is an early example of like discarded DNA collection.
Oh.
I didn't know it was this recent of a technique.
Yeah.
That, and it was controversial at the time because it's like, is that an invasion of privacy?
I was wondering that.
Is it fair game?
I think once they leave it or throw it away, it's fair game.
And it was, like the lawyers tried to contest this. His defense attorneys tried to like argue that like this DNA evidence wasn't admissible.
Right.
Because
it was under false pretense or he was entrapped or something.
Yeah, but the court allowed it. So it was fairly like a new novel thing, but you do see this kind of.
Oh yeah, I see it all the time.
Seizure in movies and stuff.
Right, where they have a drink at the bar and someone removes the glass or something.
Didn't Mayer do that?
I feel like maybe.
Like Mayer did that with a bottle, a beer bottle.
Yeah, it was a beer bottle. It was Rolling Rock.
It was Rolling Rock.
Because it's in Pennsylvania.
But you see it on Law and Order all the time.
Oh yeah, that's like so common. I actually have always wondered. I mean, I figured it's so common that it must be legal because it does seem
it seems shady.
On the border.
It seems shady.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad it works or it's legal.
I'm glad in the, if it helps, if you know, whatever.
Well, I'm glad when it helps get a murderer.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be used in a bad way.
Right.
I mean, that can be the assumption of everything I say. Always think that.
Yes, I agree. So, that's the story of the Santa Strangler.
Never heard of him.
I had never heard of him either until kind of
and
recently.
I feel like I would remember his name. I mean, obviously, it would stand out in the Santa. There's just so many crimes.
It is.
But this was, I was in LA during this.
Yeah.
I think it was like the early 2000s.
Yeah. It is always alarming when they're like, serial killer caught after 40 years and he's like 80.
Yeah.
It's so wild.
Well, it sucks because he had his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in prison now, but he's old.
Yeah.
He's been in prison for like 15 years or.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he doesn't look great. I'll just say that.
I would love to see his love letters.
I know. I was really surprised that they didn't have those. I don't know. She must have just thrown those out.
She didn't save those.
Like, this guy looks like a very unhealthy Santa Claus. I'll post a picture of him on Instagram.
Oh yeah.
He does not look very jolly to me.
He's not jolly at all.
No.
In fact,
I think they're really like stretching.
He looks
this.
Like a mall Santa where you're like, are you on parole? That one's a little more Santa.
Yeah, he's a little
but
more
he's
Santa.
Very he's not jolly. I mean, he's on trial for murder, so obviously you're not smiling, but yeah.
I told you about when my great-grandpa made it in the local paper because a kid thought he was Santa Claus when he wandered outside his home when he was had Alzheimer's.
Jeez, no.
I can't tell if this is like a family story.
Right.
And it's like the paper framed it as very heartwarming, but then it was like he was suffering from Alzheimer's.
Yeah, because like, I was like, that's funny. And then you said the Alzheimer's. I was like, oh, that's really sad because everyone's probably looking for him.
Yeah. My great grandpa Fred, the guy who worked for Warner Brothers, when I was a kid, he wandered outside of his house on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve. It was like literally either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. And he like couldn't find his house. And he knocked on this door and this little girl opened and she went, Santa.
That's creepy.
He did look like Santa towards the end though.
Right. It's like, it's kind of like those stories you see nowadays where it's like woman works 20 years to save up to buy her granddaughter a present. And it's like heartwarming. And we're all like, that's so sad. We couldn't just all give her the money. It's like she worked a second job.
Right.
And it's just like, that's not heartwarming. That's horrible. Like,
right. Just give her the money.
Yeah. Just give her. Can we just give her the money? Like, why'd she have to do all that work?
Yeah. No, I have the article somewhere. I'll have to find it.
Santa and that little girl's life is forever like haunted.
I'd like to, and then their parents were like, you know, Ashley.
It's like a horror movie where she, like that one where Joan Collins, where the little girl let Santa in. But it's you don't know that one?
No, but
you have to watch that.
But my grandpa Fred was like the sweetest guy.
I'm not saying he was a homicidal maniac.
No.
Like in the Joan Collins.
No, it's not.
Santa? I let Santa in.
But it probably was alarming for their parents.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, who's this old man at our door?
I mean, yeah, for sure. You don't know he's Gentle Fred.
No. That he was Gentle Fred. I will find that article for you.
Okay.
Okay. That's it. We're going to record the after show.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.